Hi, I'm Christian. Calling with me is James McLean, and you might, I don't know if you can hear, there's some sound in the background, if I turn up slightly. It's the voice of the Doctor, Jamie and Victoria. Doctor Who has been streaming on Twitch for the past week or so, and this is a weird thing in many ways. It's a great thing. But it's also strange because Twitch is a gaming platform, an esports platform. Most people watch Twitch for live streamed gaming, which to you that might be a bit odd. And, you know, as someone who's been playing video games for 30 years, 35 years, it's quite strange to me as well that it's become a spectator sport. Even strange that Doctor Who might be viewed alongside all these other things. But in the past few months, Twitch has been doing sort of other things, demonstrations. Video game coding tutorials and stuff like that, and, you know, events. So this isn't entirely unusual. We're currently watching, James and I separately, streaming on Twitch right now is The Enemy of the World, Part 1.
Yeah. I've never seen, so it's vaguely distracting.
I like the way the sand buggy slightly resembles a VW camper.
More than resembles. I mean, yeah, Twitch has been like a lot of these sort of platforms. It's one of those sort of things where when technology sort of, or even commerce, produces something, you're never quite sure which way it's going to go. And I could see Twitch eventually changing direction quite a lot. Jim Lee, the comic book artist, he does sessions where he just draws and people can watch him draw, and he just talks over as he does his artwork. So there's a lot of things going on Twitch now which are not, as you say, necessarily to do with video games. Obviously, this being one of them. And maybe if you haven't looked at Twitch, I suppose you... I don't know. If you can... In this scenario, if you consider YouTube, but with an active chat box that runs down the right-hand side where you can make comments as if it was a live chat. So that's the sort of thing. So you've got this interesting hybrid of watching the show by yourself probably, but you're also in a sort of community chat room where everyone is sort of conversing and weird dynamics occur.
It's worth pointing out that you can turn the chat off though.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you can, but that's sort of kind of, I don't know. I think because what is interesting here in the past week when it's been, they've been showing the First Doctor, there has been... This has sort of leaked onto other social media platforms. On Twitter, the London 1965 meme has sort of become a very big thing, which is relates to this to the rotation ad, which plays between episodes, which is a montage of the First Doctor pieces. And it has that moment in the chase when Ian and Barbara come out into London at the end and go, "Look, Barbara, it's London 1965. And that sort of became something that echoed through the chat room chamber as something that was became a sort of signifier thing for everyone to sort of leap up and sort of come together. And then that has sort of proliferated outside of Twitch and become memes everywhere else, Facebook and Twitter. So I think, yeah, if you're watching it on Twitch, you should be sort of having the chat box, because in a sense it's the chat box, which is probably the most interesting thing. Because you've probably seen these things anyway. If you're listening to this chat, I assume you're familiar with Doctor Who and you've probably seen these episodes. So it's what's going on the right-hand side, which is often the most interesting thing. And sometimes not.
Yeah, I think it depends how you're watching it. I've had it in both ways. When I've had it, when I'm just watching myself, I've had this chat on. Last night, I found it convenient to watch Doctor Who on TV. I turned the stream chat off because I was with my wife and it was a bit distracting. So I think it depends on how you're watching it. But yeah, certainly, if you're watching it alone, then it's worth having the stream on. It can be a bit distracting in terms of keeping up with what's going on, though, in the conversation.
But that's the point. I mean, if you're watching these brand new, which inevitably a lot of people on Twitch will be, and in fact, even in the chat, you can tell there's people who have never seen some of these before, then yes, maybe watching without the chat is probably more enjoyable. But if you've seen it before, like watching, listening to a commentary, it's kind of interesting to see what people are saying. And like I say, occasionally there are bursts of things which are quite interesting. Often there isn't. But again, it's interesting to see how those things are sort of coming together and how people are reacting to it, especially old and new, what people are seeing in it. And like I said, this becomes this sort of camaraderie, this group gestalt that sort of formulates behind these key words, which are becoming or had become important to the Twitch online Doctor Who community.
Yeah, I mean, there is a whole new audience watching Doctor Who right now. As we record this, as we look at it, as you hear us, because this is going on for a few weeks, this streaming of Doctor Who from beginning to end. It's not in its entirety as per the collection you might have on your shelf. For instance, the Web of Fear was on last night, and episode 3 was Telesnaps, rather than the reconstructed, recovered version from a few years ago. But on the whole, this is Doctor Who 24/7, which is something we used to dream of 20 years ago.
Hmm.
Isn't it? It's crazy.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's very true.
Yeah, I mean, did you ever do those kind of at college, or maybe, I don't know, in your spare time, when you would do a sort of imaginary TV listing? And it might be you didn't do that. Well, I did that,
no.
And it regularly had a lot of Doctor Who. It was at college.
You're so glad you've admitted that now. So just like,
I think I was ordered really to do it by my English language teacher, or my communication studies tutor, rather. I'd always put a bit of Doctor Who in there, or a little made-up documentary about Doctor Who. Of course, all the best Doctor Who documentaries have now been done as DVD extras.
But this is a very interesting phenomenon in itself. Like you say, it's not just like we've had before where we have a schedule of people watching Doctor Who. You actually have this participatory thing where people are participating in watching Doctor Who.
Well, it's interesting because, I was doing communication studies, as I say, 20 years ago, and on-demand TV was one of the big things. That was what's going to come along. Now, it's obviously taken a long time. If we're going to consider Netflix, BBC iPlayer, Amazon, it's probably took about 15 years for it to arrive properly, as it did. I don't think anyone predicted on-demand TV, which this isn't, because you're kind of tuning into it, you're not getting what you want when you want it, but then accompanied by a live chat.
It is a curious thing. I think it's kind of nice as well. I think what people are enjoying out of this is that, as you said, that you've got, 55 whatever years of Doctor Who, and you've got anyone who is into Doctor Who sitting and watching these shows. And to be fairly, that from what I've seen in the chats, and I've not been watching the Twitch ones very often, they seem to be fairly positive, friendly camaraderie, you know, so it's quite a positive experience.
Yeah.
And I think also, as I said, the London 1965 and all that, all those sort of things, which have sort of moved over to Twitter as well.
Yeah.
You're seeing that reflected there as well. And I kind of like that. I think we've got so much toxicity sort of in digital domains, and obviously in every other domain as well, but very visible in digital domains. It's kind of nice to see places where people are enjoying themselves.
Well, you know, going back again 20 odd years, there was Usenet where online communities would group, and that was pretty much the only place before the advent of discussion forums, before social media. There was Usenet, and there would be channels such as Rekard's Doctor Who, and there's a UK one as well, whose address I can't quite remember. And 80 to 90% of the discussion on them would be about how crap Sylvester McCoy was as the Doctor, in inverted commas, because obviously I don't agree. And it was week after week of slagging people off for holding a different opinion.
Yeah.
And it was quite horrific, really. It was horrendous. It was the sort of place that you didn't want to go to, unless you turned up for a jolly good argument. Or insulting, or to be insulted. Quite a bit like the Monty Python sketch, actually. Whereas this is the complete opposite. This is, as you say, the camaraderie, people watching, making observations. And I think maybe the pace of the conversation might have something to do with that.
I was going to say, yeah, I think because the people are watching, because things are moving forward, it's very hard for people to start trying to derail.
Yeah.
And it just gets moved on very, very quickly. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I remember back in, I don't know, 1999, 2000, again, you could say misappropriation of platforms – the mud channels, which were there for sort of role playing predominantly.
Oh, right, yeah.
They were sort of running. There was a Lex channel there for the TV show Lex, and that was a very positive community, which again was a sort of streaming relay chat. But by and large, yes, you're right, and certainly there were other fandoms, Millennium's fandom was very toxic at that sort of period, which caused a couple of the cast to walk away from the connection to the show. And we're seeing it now. You know, there's a lot of things at the moment on Twitter about Rose from The Last Jedi, and you know, I think Daisy Ridley as well.
It's insane, isn't it? Really, it's just let people do what they do.
Well, there's an academic who is doing at the moment, is doing work in looking at in feminist studies, looking at how much percentage of the Star Wars films has female content, because there was that a few months ago there was that one who actually removed all the women to have a male, wasn't there? There was that big thing about somewhat a Star Wars being truncated with just the men, and so she was looking at how much percentage of time the women were and what sort of interaction they had, and that again has had, she's sort of been saying, which is entirely surprising, which is sad to say, has had that sort of very toxic fireback for that study, whether one agrees with it or not. It's the sort of reaction which is the shame, really.
I mean, in terms of what you were mentioning there with Kelly Marie Tran, I understand that someone actually hacked a Wikipedia page. It just bewilders me why anyone would waste their time, take that much effort to, malign someone they don't like. If you don't like someone, then move on.
I think that's what sort of scares me a bit, is it's just so much now. I mean, I could almost say 30 years ago, I could kind of understand it, because you might have a newspaper, a book, a broken video player, and a telephone. But now, when you can be watching anything on film, anything on television, you've got interaction on a whole world wide web, if we dare use that old term, beyond having to work, probably harder these days to keep things going, social, friends, there's a outside, not going to sound old again, but I remember in the 80s, finding a good cafe was pretty damn hard. Yeah. We didn't have the sort of cafe cultures that we have now. The food has become far more high value, cultural value. There's so many things to do. Where do you get the time to do these things? Or why do you invest the time? Maybe I'm not empathizing enough. Maybe it's easy to make those sort of comments. I feel like someone who's just said to a depressed person, oh, well, just cheer up.
Pull yourself together.
I don't know why it's done, but it does kind of feel funny if we're just talking on a very shallow level, that there's so many things to do out there. To get fired up over, but then saying that, I've never done anything like that, but I've sat on forums and had long arguments with people over Final Fantasy VII or Doctor Who when I could have been outside or watching a film. So yeah, maybe it's just being a bit narrow-minded. It's the same sort of thing, just on the next level, I guess. But I learned very quickly that you just end up feeling very frustrated going back to your computer to see what the next volley of argument is, and you just think, why am I doing this? So anyway, I like this. It's positive, it's friendly, it's embracing science fiction culture in a time where we see so much negativity around it.
Yes, definitely. It's something I've noticed about The Enemy of the World as well. I have not seen all of it. I've seen one or two episodes, but I haven't seen all of it. And I've noticed this, it's impossible not to notice. It's the pace, and they kind of, there's a Pertwee era feeling to it. With the action and everything, and it's been directed by Barry Letts, which might have a big part to play in that.
I've not been able to watch it because I've been prevaricating. But from the clips I've been seeing, as I say, I never actually watched Enemy of the World. It is got a lovely sort of speed, different places, movement. There's a lot of activity in it. You've had two vehicles at least in the last 10 minutes,
and it's set in 2018 as well.
It's 2018, is it?
It is.
well, I know.
So let's have a look at what we should all be wearing.
Patrick has aged well, hasn't he? Yeah. It is interesting. I see again on the chats on the side, you know, we're getting things like United Zones 1965. Earlier we had Australia, and it's come back again, Australia 2018.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're getting these sort of participatory sort of connections that are just running through this whole run of Twitch shows. It'll be interesting to see how it goes on, if people, well, I suppose people will stay to the end, but whether this will mutate. I kind of liked last week because the London 1965, and because I'm a big Ian fan.
Yes, of course.
And there was a lot of focus around Ian, which I think, is interesting, that when you get this sort of community watching, especially with so many people watching for the first time, it was really really nice to see Ian Chesterton getting such love. Because he's sort of almost forgotten in the culture.
Well, aren't they? Ian and Barbara.
Yeah, I suppose with Ian it's just a little more annoying because William Russell is still here.
Yeah.
And as someone put on Twitter, and I totally agree, it just seems such a shame that he is so important within the narrative of Doctor Who, and yet you just get these occasional things on, you know, little placards and references to him in the show, and you think, why have you just not used him? Why have you not used him on a phone call or something? You know, the dramatic element of having the person who affects the last person alive, anyway, who first changed the main character into the character you love, and he's just never acknowledged.
And the other thing as well is that I think maybe more people will now appreciate, and I don't know how many people are watching Twitch, and it might be that you're not, dear listener, but we'll come to that in a bit. But, you know, the viewing audience on Twitch will now have more of an appreciation of Ian and Barbara's role in the early show.
Yes, that's true.
Whereas, you know, Received Wisdom is like Doctor Who was great because of the Daleks, because of who was directing it, because of who was producing it, etc., who else was writing for it. But really, that cast in the first 2 years is what carried it forward.
Which is frustrating in a sense, because what the new show kind of did, inadvertently, it did, like you said, it took what is that sort of popular memory of Sarah Jane Smith, and she sort of almost became like the sort of keynote of the old show, that she was the speaker for the classic era. That was where it almost existed, was with her, and then it went on. And everything before that was kind of, it just didn't really exist, because the way the Doctor reacted to her as well, it was almost like she was the very first companion, that she was the, you know, the person that made him who he is. And even though we've had David Bradley as the Doctor, perhaps not really, and that's going to be interesting. I wonder whether people watching him now from this, and then relate to him in as David Bradley in the Christmas special, whether they'll see why there was a slight friction from people saying, this isn't really William Hartnell. This is like a pastiche of 60s culture rolled up into a character to say funny, silly things on Christmas Day.
A caricature.
Well, yeah, it's just a caricature. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think this is really good because it sort of gives people a chance to see the stuff which the classic show really hasn't dutifully looked at. Maybe the reason it hasn't dutifully is because it hasn't had anyone from that era, which, you know, even Fraser Hines is around, you know, Wendy Padbury's still around, Ian Russell's still around, Caroline Ford, you know, there's people there that could, and I think that's why Sarah Jane Smith worked, because she was someone from that era, so she could bring that with her, while David Bradley, bless him, and the writing for David Bradley is a construction of now. So yeah, I kind of, it would be lovely if this sort of encouraged perhaps some use of some of those old actors, because it just seems at the moment it's only Big Finish which really embraces their talent.
Well, yeah, I think Big Finish are quite prepared to embrace pretty much everything at the moment though, aren't they? So,
but I don't think that's a bad thing.
Sure it helps credibility.
Well, credibility, what is credibility? Credibility among a few angry fans? I don't know. I've been meant to review it for many months, and I've just really, it's taken me a long time, for Doctor Who Companion, the Churchill Tales Volume 2, mm-hmm. Churchill Years Volume 2. And I hate Victory of the Daleks with an absolute passion. But there is no doubt that them having plucked the William Churchill character from that one episode and done two volumes of stories with him is actually rather good, because it's actually made me warm to Victory of the Daleks, because it's given him, rather than having this sort of almost this trivial smug idea that the Doctor knows Winston Churchill as well, it gives a little bit of a foundation to that. It makes that a little more believable, and thus makes that episode feel a little more wholesome. And I imagine possibly Lady Christina might do the same for Planet of the Dead, which I loathed as well. Maybe that would make me like her as well. So yeah, because it's got nothing in there that you have to listen to, you don't have to listen to Big Finish to enjoy the TV show. If you want to, maybe these things are quite cool. And, you know, I think people, we just need to sort of step back, and if people want to listen to it, they do. If they don't, it doesn't make money and they don't do it anymore. Kind of annoying, though, that they stopped doing the New Adventures adaptations, because they weren't financially, from what I was told, weren't financially... And yet, you know, Lady Christina's coming out. It's like, I know which I think has got more value and is more interesting, you know, as an adaptation as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, in many ways, the entire original novel era of Doctor Who is kind of largely overlooked, isn't it? I think unfairly, overall unfairly.
Given its, given how much it influenced the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly. And how important it was between 1992, was it when it launched, 93, and in 2005, how important it was.
Absolutely, and maybe in a few years we'll have them on Twitch. There'll be like a page on the screen, and people will be able to chat, and the page will slowly turn.
Just watch people reading.
Yeah, but yeah, they were brilliant, and they were very important. And like you say, they are very much lost to culture, in the same way that one could argue this sort of stuff has been lost to. Because I mean, again, we've got to say that the BBC DVDs, they're not cheap, given what you get on them. I mean, yeah, you can find them on Amazon for a good price, you know, $4.99, $5.99, but if you consider what you can get the four seasons of Black Sails for £15, you know, and while yes, I would acknowledge there are a lot of extras often on the BBC videos, perhaps not on the Enemy of the World and the Web of Fear until recently, you know, they're not sort of engaging younger people to perhaps buy them or watch them. So this sort of thing may sort of bring people in and see, you know, how the show was, and maybe perhaps enjoy the different pace. I don't know. I mean, I do. I mean, I think that's something important for me is that, you know, we were effectively 80s Doctor Who for us.
Yeah.
Which is a very different pace to 60s. And yet I will sit and I'll watch 60s quite happily and enjoy the different pace. So I don't think it's necessarily that, you know, things are too slow for people now to enjoy, in the same way that you can watch, you know, a film from the 30s or 40s and still enjoy it. Might be a different experience. You know, it might not quite fit, or you might have to be a little more patient, but you can still enjoy it. So I don't see any reason why people can't get invested in this, because I think they're great.
Now, an interesting thing, and we'll maybe just talk about Twitch and how you can watch it, because I had thought this was only on an evening. The reason for this is when I checked the Twitch website, which is www.twitch.tv, I caught one of these trailers that you can hear in the background now. And I just assumed, because, you know, I was just looking while I wasn't working for a few minutes, I just assumed that it was just, you know, 12 hours of trailer and then some streaming in the evening. It was only, I think it was last night, when it dawned on me that maybe actually, when I realised how fast they'd got to the Second Doctor, when it dawned on me that actually it might be running 24/7.
Well, they have breaks, I think, but I thought it was morning and evenings, but I could say
it. No. It could be that as well. I've not been able to find anything that specifically says what it is. But regardless, it is. I mean, we're recording this at like 11:00. It's 11:05 a.m. in the morning right now. We're watching The Enemy of the World on Twitch, which is, as we've already established, that's quite cool to be able to do that. Now, Twitch isn't only available through your web browser. You can get a Twitch mobile app for Android or iOS. You can download a Twitch client to your PC if you prefer to use that rather than a web browser. And there are Twitch apps for Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3, PS4, and for Amazon Fire Sticks as well. which is how I was watching it last night. So, and I imagine there's probably a Twitch streaming app for the Roku Media Center as well. So if you've got any of those solutions, and there may be one or two smart TVs that have a Twitch app as well, you really don't have an excuse not to watch this. It's absolutely free, other than, you know, your internet bandwidth, which you're playing monthly anyway, so that's beside the point. You can watch this as we're watching it anytime it's on, as from the duration. And as we understand it, it's running from episode 1, which was last week, on Unearthly Child, all the way through to part 4 of Survival in 1989. So, you know, 26 years of Doctor Who streamed on the internet with some conversation alongside it, text conversation alongside it, which you can enjoy, engage with, or ignore. It's not a bad deal, is it?
No, absolutely not. I was kind of surprised. I thought they'd be at least expecting you to log in and sign up.
Of course, yeah, you don't even need to sign up. You can watch it. You can sign up if you want to.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. You can just watch it without signing up. Yeah, I forgot about that.
No, so it's interesting. It's an interesting approach. I'm not quite sure how the economic model works for this, but it's interesting. And again, you know, one of the things that we find in this day and age is obviously we're seeing this tension between the issues of we'll call analog commerce and digital commerce. And, you know, analog commerce is all about things having value and thus costing more. So it's about how scarce something is. And obviously with a digital, it's a totally different thing. It's, you know, things are expected for free. Everything, you can't make something scarce when something's digital. It's very hard. So things are widely distributed. How do you make money out of that model? So you've got this question of how do you change your economy? How do you change your commerce? And obviously recently with Facebook, we've seen how the user as product model of you getting free access to social media, but they take your information, has suddenly becoming very, very unpopular, to the point where new laws have occurred. But this is interesting because I'm not quite sure where this fits and how this works.
No.
And I'm kind of hoping there's something interesting going on here. A different ideology, and I don't know what that could be. I don't know where the ideology sits on it. And yeah, there's an optimistic, positive part of me thinking, have someone found some new ideas that we sort of accept that we can't make these things scarce? And if we can't, is there other ways that money will be generated? I don't know. I suppose the thing with streaming is that once it's streamed, it's streamed. So does that sort of encourage people who have seen it to actually go out and buy? They've not seen it, or does it re-engage them when they go and buy stuff, or does that just bring them into Twitch and they log in? And I don't know. It is Twitch gambling on it that it will bring people to actually sign up, log in, and start using their channels or watching their channels and sort of interacting financially with those channels as well. I don't know.
No, I'm not entirely certain either. It is curious. I dare say we'll find out, because, you know, some of the channels on Twitch, I mean, we're watching this, I don't know how many we've got at the moment. I think it tells you when you're about to view something how many people are watching it simultaneously. And, you know, there's a few thousand watching, but look at some of the esports, the actual games, video game streaming that's taking place. You've got millions of people watching.
It's an incredible.
It's funny because many years ago I was a very, very regular computer gamer, and one of the games I played was called Kick Off 2, which was a soccer game, and I played it to the extent that I felt that I was pretty much unbeatable, and, you know, anyone who came around to my house to play it, I was unbeatable. Now, it would have been nice to have an audience to, you know, win the World Cup against people or whatever. I'm pretty certain I wasn't completely unbeatable, and there was other people who were better than me, but none of them live near me. But now you have there's actual kickoff tournaments, playing kickoff on the Amiga. I think there was one last year in Ireland, which, you know, would be great to go to and compete, but, you know, I wouldn't get very far through because I'm completely out of practice, and it requires a very specific type of joystick to gain any level of success. But, you know, that's just a live version of what we're seeing here. So, like, esports is becoming a thing. and for other things, oh, Milton Johns, for other things to then be able to piggyback onto that is quite cool, I think. I think it's really, because it's kind of a niche that has a massive audience, so why shouldn't these other things that already have big audiences come along as well?
Well, it feels like it's a slight evolution on the streaming platform. And I wonder whether that's why they've invested in Doctor Who. I wonder whether this is Twitch's attempt to draw in people outside of video games.
Well, I think, isn't Twitch owned by Amazon now?
It is now, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got Amazon basically has its own YouTube right here, doesn't it?
Essentially, yeah. So it could be looking at the moment to see, this could be an experiment to see if they can pull in larger crowds than just a video game model and extend to challenge YouTube. Which, if that's the case, it's still interesting, still an evolution, but it's still the same old commercial practices, I guess. But at the moment, we can just enjoy the entertainment of their trial, which I guess this is what it is. But yeah, it has been an interesting run, and I'm quite interested in watching Enemy of the World. I must admit, now I'd be very keen personally to actually possibly purchase it. Or watch it, certainly, without you talking in my ear.
it's just the
design.
It's well directed, isn't it? And the design, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't feel like it fits within the Troughton era, particularly. It does have a little bit of a...
Which is strange, because it's still the first half of the Troughton era as well, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. I couldn't imagine, you know, given this is just a year or so since Hartnell, you couldn't consider this in a Hartnell era.
No, it's winter 1967. It went out over both years, 67 and 68. So, yeah. No, I agree. And I think George Pravda is in this as well, which means there's two people who later appeared in Deadly Assassin. Was Milton Johns in... Oh, no, he wasn't in Deadly Assassin, was he? He was in Invasion of Time, Milton Johns. My mistake. Both Gallifrey, though.
But what is interesting, and we've talked about this before, that we always said that, you know, you have this issue of a show that the show losing its target audience of kids and sort of aiming at sort of slightly older, more mature audiences. I wonder if Troughton's era perhaps suffered a bit from that it was growing up too much too quickly. Because we saw the ratings did eventually drop, and there's no doubt that the Troughton era is certainly a far more adult era than the Hartnell one. But I suppose Pertwee was the same. Pertwee didn't, certainly for its first season, it didn't change tone.
I think
changed tone, but not its maturity, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Pertwee is we don't really have anything to compare it to in terms of, you know, a similar tone, something that's like tonally similar other than other shows. Whereas the Troughton era and the later Pertwee era feel like more the same show than Series 7 maybe does.
This is an interesting one. I mean, it definitely changes from... I mean, obviously, Hartnell's era is changing all the time as well. But I just wondered what... I'd be interested to know really what went wrong with the Troughton era in terms of viewing figure drop-off. Was it just... I mean, people say, well, people were just bored with Doctor Who, but then you've got to say, well, weren't exactly many other great shows to be watching at this time. I mean, obviously, there were things that were being put on against it. But it was still fairly unique.
Yeah, I mean, you're only really talking about, well, it's 67, 68, so...
Exactly.
The Prisoner, Patrick McGoohan, and maybe Roger Moore in The Saint. They're the only sort of, like, really long-running shows that people are still watching and talking about occasionally.
So I don't think Star Trek came over to the UK until the early 70s, did it?
No, I don't believe so, no.
But, yeah, so you've got that issue, and the fact that you're only talking about 7 years... Which, you know, if you're thinking of a kid watching Doctor Who when they're sort of six or seven and being blown away by William Hartnell, they're only 14. This still isn't that. This isn't childish for a 14-year-old. I mean,
no,
maybe that was it. Maybe, and you get kids, so, and the whole idea of obviously with Doctor Who is you get kids within that period who are seven, eight, getting into it, so they sort of roll on. It's just on what they did wrong. Because, you know, this is, you know, compared to the stuff you see in the Hartnell era, which is still most of it, all the way to the end, still trying to find its voice in a lot of ways. by this point, you're starting to feel the show has found its voice, and it's just not very popular.
It's quite strange. That's something I've just noticed, Dan. I think we were both watching a bit of Tomb of the Cybermen before.
Yes.
Before this started, there's a black actress in The Enemy of the World, and obviously there's the Toadman character in Tomb of the Cybermen, which was obviously unusual for the time.
That's true. I mean, Toberman wasn't exactly the best use of any sort of ethnic actors, but at least they had.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
And it was one that people could relate to, and wasn't essentially an antagonist. That haircut is. I've never understood why women. Why. Even Barbara.
What do you call that haircut? Is that a... What is it?
I have no idea.
A Pertwee? What is...
Gone, thankfully.
Is that the sound effects off the... Yeah, it is. That's it. It's a very annoying sound, isn't it?
And it's funny as well, given how quickly Troughton, by this point, you think how Troughton is in Power of the Daleks. I suppose he's not quick, but he's really found his character by this point.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, many people have said that he's probably the best actor to play the Doctor, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I think there's something quite natural about him.
Yeah.
Which I can't think of many other Doctors which had that sort of natural. I mean, Pertwee always felt like it was someone playing an action hero. Harnell always felt to me, bless him, as someone who was playing a doddery old man. I think he was better in his first season, as we've said before.
Hmm.
Yeah, and all the others tend to feel like they are playing a role, but Troughton never does. And yet you never imagine that he was like that outside the role, unlike, say, Tom Baker, where you didn't imagine there was a horrendous amount of difference between the two, bar the vodka. Or the gin and tonic and the cigarette that might separate the pair out.
Some lewd after-hours behaviour in certain Soho pubs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Davison is probably along, closer to Troughton, but overall, yeah.
Yeah, I think also Troughton sort of, I don't know, he just kind of fits in it. And I don't say that of any particular love. I mean, I love Davidson, but I think by that point, maybe because the show knew what it was, maybe it felt a little more of a sort of replication of itself. I don't know.
But also, I mean, as you say, this is a year after Hartnell. And, you know, this is completely and utterly Troughton's show. I know, admittedly, this story, he's got kind of two parts.
Yes.
But, you know, it's absolutely his show. You know, no one's thinking of William Hartnell now. They're watching this guy. He's absolutely magnetic. Every scene he's in, he's absolutely in control of.
Yeah, absolutely. And that shift as well, taking away from being a grandfather to, at best, an uncle.
Yeah.
I think was a big difference as well. Made him someone that people could actually follow and relate to. And could be very much part of the show as well, unlike Hartnell's ailments, which constantly has him having to take a rest or get locked up. So, I mean, I wonder whether Jamie as well was a very good choice at this point. Just watching Jamie in his action role at this moment. Because, I mean, obviously Ian was, but then to be fair to Jamie has a younger, he's a younger character, which would probably relate a little more to teen audiences. I was never convinced that Ben managed.
No, Ben didn't, and Stephen was really very much a kind of future Ian, wasn't he? And partially because of they've chosen actor in Peter Purvis, who's physically similar to William Russell.
Yes. I mean, one thing I did like about Stephen in rewatches is he was quite antagonistic to the Hartnell Doctor when he wanted to be. There was a far more brutal character than I realised. But yeah, I never felt that he really had the charm that you needed, especially with Hartnell never always been quite there. You need a second actor to carry when Hartnell has to take a rest. And Ian could carry it and you'd forget about Hartnell, but I'd always be aware when...
Where's Hartnell when you're watching Stephen? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Many years ago, I interviewed Peter Purvis for Castorbris. Yeah. And I may have told this story before. We just many things via email. But one of the things that he said was that he wished he'd been asked to play the Doctor.
It's interesting. I've never seen anything in Peter Purvis which would make a Doctor. But that's sometimes the sad thing, you know, with acting, is you don't get to see everyone's...
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he spent so many years producing, didn't he? And presenting.
But, I mean, the perfect example is The Enemy of the World, isn't it, where you see Troughton playing two very different roles.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't sort of... If you saw him just playing singly one of them, you wouldn't imagine doing the other. So maybe Purvis could have done something quite good. But, yeah, losing Ian was a big... It was a big shock. And I'm kind of disappointed that I wasn't following Twitch after Ian went to see what people said about Stephen. Whether Ian's disappearance and Barbara's disappearance was heavily missed.
No, that's an interesting
bit of...
That's a
great shot, isn't it? Video on top of...
With a film back,
really well.
Backdrop.
Yeah. Nice. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things in Enemy of the World. I kind of wish I'd actually watched it before seeing this.
Yeah, that's Barry Letts doing his old experimentation again. He was a big fan of the CSO, wasn't he? The Core Separation Overlay later when we were in the Pertwee era.
That's...
I mean, that's got some lovely depth, hasn't it? It's good, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. I also like the way that then they will bring the actual actor on. So Frasier comes on as himself after being part of the footage. It's... Yeah, it's a very nice show. See people talking about it on the Twitch. Jamie and his magic kilt. That fake background, is that a projection? Projection into a real man.
Could they not afford a trip to the park?
Well, no, because outside location's expensive.
Yeah.
Why do you think people use studios all the time? Yeah, I think the only thing that gets me with watching these early ones, and I watched The Rescue yesterday. I had a day off yesterday. I decided I wasn't going to do anything or talk to anyone that I needed to. And I put on The Rescue. Just because I was just, you know, going through, I just thought, I'll just do what I want. I'll read a bit of this, watch a bit of that, watch a bit of this. And after watching a little bit of Twitch, I just watched The Rescue. And I was watching Vicky's appearance. And while she does The Rescue is a really good story, I do like it. And I think she does a good job trying to sort of establish a slightly more emotional character than she ever gets to be after that, where she can actually challenge Barbara. Again, the girls are so very disappointing, aren't they, after Barbara? I mean, Susan obviously wasn't anything to write home about either. But even at this point, I mean, I know a lot of people have a lot of time for Victoria, but it's nothing there.
It's really, you're really waiting until Liz Shaw comes around, but then after that, and I know Joe Grant's popular, but really it is Sarah Jane who kind of re-establishes it.
Hadbury does some good stuff. She has some nice bits where she challenges Trout, and some lovely bits in the Crotons, isn't there, where she's
but it doesn't really persist to the end, does it? It turns into more of a plot point.
Yes, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I'd say she was the first starting to move. But yeah, Liz Shaw went totally the right way. And then I got the feeling that either the team or Pertwee then dialed that back.
Yeah.
To something a little more conventional. And Sarah Jane is good. But even there, Sarah Jane, you see her lose her tracking, doesn't she? You know, you think of her in the first season where she's the journalist. By the time she's with Baker, the journalism thing is almost out the window. She is. She's still a strong character, but she's not what she was originally brought in to be.
No.
I mean, Leela's a problem because while she is a strong character and is a great character in a lot of ways, the way that she's used is still very much under that masculine gaze, isn't it? It takes a... Well, maybe we've never got out of that, to be fair. But, yeah, at this point, certainly, not until Pertwee do we start to see anything interesting, really, with the female.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you're ever going to get out of it unless you've got, you know, in an age when... And it's still... And obviously, it's more mixed now, but in an age of, sort of like... 80 years worth of broadcasting is largely overseen by men, you're always going to have that aspect to it, unless it swings in completely the other way. Then,
well, Catherine Tate, I think, was a bit of a swing, which I thought was really good. But you're right, I don't think we've really seen much beyond that. I mean, you know, Amy Pond, I mean, Karen's proved herself to be a good actress, but there's no doubt that she was cast for the aesthetic that she brought as much as her acting. And again, we obviously, to some degree, that's the same with men as well. There's no doubt about that. But you can't help but watch Doctor Who and notice a disparity between interesting male characters and interesting female characters.
Well, I mean, that may be about to change, obviously.
Absolutely, we'll see. And again, I think a lot of that will depend on how the writing goes rather than the casting goes. But yeah, I think we're up to see some interesting attempts at refreshing the format.
There's something very compelling about this idea of the Doctor having a doppelganger, isn't there? An evil doppelganger.
Yes. I quite one of the again, it's one of those silly fan things, but the whole idea that was sort of thrown in with the Capaldi Doctor and him having borrowed a face that would remind him of his past. I kind of like the idea that the faces the Doctors wear is almost like a body snatchery thing, that there's no real imagination or there's no randomness to the genetics. It's something subconscious. He just sort of borrows a face that has haunted him. Obviously, at this point, you can't say, well, that's not the case because he's never met. But maybe you saw a picture of him.
Yeah. But, you know, that idea of the Doctor having an evil doppelganger, it throws you entire... You know, you've been watching this new guy as the Doctor for so long, and suddenly you're a little bit on edge as to whether he's really the good guy or not. You know, when you've got these scenes where, like we saw in towards the end of the first episode, where he's pretending to be Salamander.
Yeah.
And you're not entirely... You initially think it is Salamander, he's just turned up. And even though in your head it's not likely because you just watched Salamander on giving a broadcast from elsewhere... Is it that unlikely? Could he actually have got there, in fact? Because, you know, it's set in the future. Maybe they've got fast transport or whatever. And it turns out, oh, actually, it's the Doctor pretending to be Salamander to rescue his friends.
Yeah, and it's a shame because it's such a nice performance. It'd be great to see other Doctors having that opportunity, and they never really do. I mean, obviously, Megloss, you get one for Baker.
And there's one for Matt Smith as well in the Gangers.
The Gangers, story. And you can also go to Nightmare and Steel as well.
Yeah,
where he gets to sort of play a slightly different variant.
He's basically playing Skynet, actually, in that one, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
In a few years early.
And you could also look at, I was going to say, you could argue, look at Ark Infinity. It's not really much for Davison to play there.
Not really, no.
But ultimately, yes, you're right. There's not really that much we get to see. Doctors have that sort of fun, which is a shame because I think generally speaking, for actors to be able to play the Doctor, you've got to have a certain amount of range. But and it's such an insane show where you could get away with doing
absolutely
stuff like this.
Well, that's the end of the second episode of Enemy of the World. I think it's probably a good time to bring this to a close.
As
we've said, there's a lot to be gained from watching Doctor Who on Twitch. There's just watching episodes you haven't seen before, I haven't seen for a long time, without worrying about your DVDs, but worrying about paying Apple to download them or whatever. You can watch this on your phone or tablet. You could be watching this in your lunch break at work or at school or college or whatever. And you can engage with the chat. You can watch it pretty much on any device at any time until the end of this streaming. Hopefully this is a big success. I think it would be great if as many people as possible were watching Doctor Who on Twitch to make this a success. And you get the opportunity to basically see what other people... If you're familiar with these, then you can see what other people are seeing watching these episodes for the first time. And I think that is pretty valuable in many ways. I mean, if you're watching Doctor Who with young children who haven't seen it before, then you get to see it in a different way. Here we're watching it with, I guess, I don't want to generalise too much, but millennials, and they're seeing things that maybe we haven't seen or have forgotten about.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, Doctor Who on Twitch. Check it out before it goes away. Until next time, that's all from us. Goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.